KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Elmwood.
El Sobrano.
Do you live in Richmond?
Yeah.
Albany Village.
Coming up, when immigrants send money back home, it's not only about dollar amounts.
Lo que llegamos a percibir o escuchar.
Robert explains how the flow of people sometimes depends on the news.
Then, how a local nonprofit is helping migrants keep up with the changes in immigration law.
Just to get the word out to the community that there's more to it than what the administration may be scaring them with.
And an audiograph, a signature sound from around the Bay Area.
When the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart.
We're showing a demonstration of what it's like to go through an Israeli checkpoint.
What is that? Stay tuned to find out. Cross Currents is coming up. President Trump has had both strong rhetoric and policies on immigration during his presidency. Lately, the threat of ICE raids has the Latino immigrant community fearing potential deportation. One way that immigrants' lives are impacted is through remittances. That's money sent from the U.S. to other countries. In this story, KALW's Adriana Morga tells us how the current political environment affects remittances.
When you walk along San Francisco's Mission Street, you see these stores painted with bright colors with signs saying money sending, envíos de dinero. On weekends, you can see the long lines of people waiting. Remittances, called remesas in Spanish, are sent all over the world. But on this specific street, the money is mostly sent to Latin America. Robert Avellanos is a co-owner of Money Express Center in the Excelsior District.
Día a día abrimos de las 9 de la mañana y desde que venimos de las 9 de la mañana ya hay una línea de personas esperando para empezar a procesar dinero.
He says from the moment he opens at 9 a.m., there's a line of people waiting to send money to their families.
El cliente más regular es el mexicano. Salvadoreño y hondureño.
He says his most regular clients are Mexicans, Salvadorans, and Hondurans. In fact, after India and China, Mexico receives more remittance money for the United States than any other country, $36 billion in 2018. But remittances are not only about numbers. Tracking them can also tell us something about the United States' political environment. Back in 2016, then-candidate Donald Trump released a memorandum stating his plans to make Mexico pay for a wall by strictly regulating the money sent to Mexico.
We will build a great wall along the southern border. And Mexico will pay for the wall.
He laid out his plan in a two-page memo that he sent to the Washington Post. He says that he would threaten to cut off the flow of billions of dollars in payments sent home by Mexican immigrants.
The total amount of money sent to Mexico through remittances rose after Trump made those threats. It went from nearly $70 billion in 2016 to $88 billion in 2018. I asked Robert Avellanos, who owns the store on Mission Street, if he's seen any changes in the flow of customers since Trump threatened more ICE raids this summer.
Lo que llegamos a percibir o escuchar de alguna gente es que ellos estaban reteniendo su dinero en efectivo.
Robert explains to me how the flow of people sometimes depends on the news. Some days, he says, the store was empty after the news of impending ICE raids. But a little later, people line up to send all of their money out of the United States. He said everyone talks about Trump's politics. The community is afraid.
Y todo mundo habla de la política de Trump. Todo mundo viene acá con miedo, ¿verdad?
But not everyone uses brick and mortar stores to send money internationally.
Pues yo tengo una manera por medio de un website que se llama Zoom.
Ignacio Fuentes is originally from Guanajuato, Mexico. He tells me he uses a service called Zoom, owned by PayPal, which is connected to his bank account. Easy. Apps like Zoom can be convenient and could be seen as safer than doing money exchange in person. But these stores are still the most popular way of sending money to countries like El Salvador. And there are some restrictions for sending money online. For example, some of them are only in English, and others do not work with cash. So if people in the receiving country don't have bank accounts, these apps might not work. Also, some people simply do not trust online services and prefer to go to stores like Robert's.
Yo veo las grandes filas todos los días.
This is Regina Garay. She's originally from El Salvador, and now she's a street vendor on 24th Street in Mission. She said in the last couple of years, she has been seeing longer lines outside money transfer stores every day. She believes that people are sending their money out of fear of getting deported.
Entonces, ¿qué es lo que está pasando? La gente está sacando su dinero por miedo a que la deporten.
Regina says that even with all of the fear, she believes immigrant communities will be fine.
Trauma ahí va a estar, y los inmigrantes aquí van a estar, y está difícil que lo saquen.
She says Trump may be in the White House, but immigrants will still be here, and it will be hard to make them leave. On Mission Street, I'm Adriana Morga for Cross Currents.
Adriana reported that story as part of our summer journalism training program. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Remittances are just one aspect of immigrant life being affected by Trump's immigration policies. But as we hear frequently in the news, immigrants are having to navigate a system that changes with each new policy. Whether it's about asylum, deportation, ICE raids, keeping up with what's legal and what's not can be hard. For people here in the Bay Area, that's where Oakland-based Centro Legal de la Raza comes in. It's been providing migrants with legal representation for 50 years, helping them navigate the U.S. immigration system. And with the rules changing what seems like every couple months, they've had to increase their educational work, just explaining the law. And they found a lot of misinformation in immigrant communities. Maciel Jaques is the new managing director of Centro Legal. She joined me in studio to tell me more.
So we get questions, you know, a lot of misinformation about removal cases, which is like deportation cases, a lot of misinformation about humanitarian cases, which is like the U visa for victims of crime, T visas for victims of trafficking. We also get a lot of confusion about family-based cases, which is like visa petitions for people that are trying to bring over family members from other countries, green card applications. So I think every case has been affected, and every case requires a lot more scrutiny and clarifying for people that want to apply for them because of all of the confusion and misinformation that is coming out of the administration.
Mm. And what are some of the more recent policies that you've really had to spend some time educating people on?
I think the most recent, probably one of the bigger ones, is public charge, as far as who this affects, who it doesn't affect, when it starts.
So can you briefly tell us what that is?
Sure. So in a hopefully not confusing nutshell, one, it's not in effect yet. It starts on October 15th, and it relates to people that are applying for a green card, and it does not affect people that are applying for humanitarian-based applications. And so right now, I think any person who is in an immigration who has an immigration application pending, they automatically assume that it affects them, and it does not. That's why we're advising them to consult with an attorney or a DOJ representative, because a lot of people are unenrolling in benefits that they are entitled to or their children are because they think that it affects them.
So can you explain what the new law will do?
So if you are receiving benefits for Section 8
food stamps,
welfare, food stamps, then it would likely make you a public charge.
Which means?
Which means you have financial burden on the government.
Hmm.
if you're applying for one of those, and that could affect your eligibility for whatever immigration benefit you're applying for.
Which a lot of people do because they're new in this country. They're coming, a lot of people, with nothing.
Which a lot of people do, but a lot of people also receive some of these benefits for their children. Their children are the ones who are receiving the benefits, like food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
So it would not affect the parent because the child is the one who is receiving that benefit. And that's where some of the confusion comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another confusing question that a lot of people have is, if I'm applying for a U visa, does that affect me? And that falls under the humanitarian applications, and it does not affect those applications either. So it actually only ends up affecting a smaller portion of people that are applying for certain benefits, not the entire immigrant community as it's been made to seem by the Trump administration.
And, you know, that's kind of the word, right? This
right.
is happening. Mm. Be careful you don't, you know, apply for food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful you don't apply for Section 8 housing,
right.
because that might affect, you know, you getting a green card.
Right. But what they hear instead is, don't apply for any public benefits because you're going to get deported. You know, that's the message that's out there right now. In actuality, that's not what the case is. So that's why, again, we're spreading a lot of this information and clarifying a lot of this information through our Know Your Rights presentations, through consultations at our office, training other service providers as to what public charge is, just to get the word out to the community that there's more to it than what the administration may be scaring them with.
And what other misinformation is out there? What are people coming to you confused about and you're finding they're just like misinformed?
There's so much, I think, clarity around what sanctuary means, sanctuary cities. So I think people sometimes assume that because they live in a sanctuary city like Oakland, San Francisco, Hayward, San Leandro, a lot of other cities and counties around the Bay Area, and, you know, it is a sanctuary state as well. I think they assume that that means that ICE will not conduct any raids. But what sanctuary means is that local police and government will not cooperate or are not supposed to cooperate with ICE. That doesn't really take into account the sheriff, you know, the county sheriff, which is county, not city. So just education around that, and also education as to what their rights are. They think that if ICE comes knocking on your door, they have to open the door. And what they don't know is that by opening the door, that you're basically inviting them to come inside. So that's why we pass out these little red cards that we have that explain, you know, you don't have to answer the door. You have the right to remain silent, you know, that the Constitution protects everyone, not just U.S. citizens.
Do they get it? Coming from countries where you really don't trust the system, mm-hmm. you don't trust police, you don't trust, you know, systems that are supposed to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
There's overall kind of a wariness about, you know, really, if a uniformed person or a non-uniformed person, you know, comes knocking on my door, what do you mean I don't answer the door?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they getting the message?
In my experience, I think people are getting it because that's why we pass out these cards. They can carry it with them in their wallets, in their purse, wherever, and that is a reminder. Also on there is the number to ASILEP, which is our rapid response network in Alameda County. San Francisco has one as well. So
what is that? Tell me about that.
So ASILEP is a rapid response network in Alameda County where if there's ICE activity, people can call and report what they think is ICE conducting a raid or, you know, whatever the situation may be. We will dispatch local observers to go and verify that it is, in fact, ICE activity. If there is anyone detained, then our attorneys will, you know, contact the person in detention and hopefully represent them, get them out on bond or whatever immigration relief they need, we will assist with. But it's a 24-hour hotline. We've recently also partnered with another rapid response network, Stand Together Contra Costa, so that, you know, the community can feel that we're defending them and we're here to protect them, and they have these resources and all they have to do is call this number and someone will be able to help them. There's always a dispatcher. It's 24 hours. And so we feel like things like that, giving them the cards, we really do try to saturate the Bay Area, you know, with Know Your Rights information, mm-hmm. you know, especially in these times. I mean, like we were saying earlier, even before Trump was elected, we were doing this in anticipation of, you know, and since then it's like, every month we're having to adjust the curriculum because something else comes out or there's a new rumor. But I really do feel like people are understanding it. I think that the cards help because it's a reminder. If you have any confusion, you just look down there, you see there's a phone number, you can call them and someone will always answer.
What would you say are your biggest challenges today?
one of our biggest challenges is all of the misinformation and the fear that is out in the community right now. The administration almost weekly puts out some new message, some new confusing message, scary message to the community where it's just trying to intimidate the immigrant population. That affects a lot of people. You know, people don't want to leave their houses sometimes. People don't want to take their kids to school. They don't want to apply for public benefits that they are entitled to. They don't want to apply for an immigration benefit because they don't want to put themselves on their radar. You know, it's just, I would say that that's probably the biggest challenge is the administration and its messaging.
You recently joined Centro Legal, but it is celebrating its 50th.
Yes.
What do you think its plans are for, you know, this is a different era than the time when it began, you know, with different priorities and different kinds of cases, but a more educated public as well, because of your work.
Right.
What are you as an organization thinking about going forward right now?
Yeah, so in our 50th year, you know, we're getting back to our roots, which also is something really important to me personally because I'm actually born and raised in the Fruitvale neighborhood. Yeah, and so, and actually a lot of the staff is, and some of the newer staff is as well. So for us, you know, it is personal for us because we did grow up in that area, and a lot of those people do look like our families, and these are resources that our families could have used going back 20, 30 years. And Centro has only gotten, you know, it's gotten bigger and it's gotten better. We do plan to continue to advocate for our community, for our clients in court, in courtrooms, with litigation, through civic engagement, through any means necessary where we need to let the community know that we're there for them. And we'll always be there. And we've been there for the last 50 years and we plan on being there for another 250 years.
Maciel Jaques is the new managing director of Centro Legal de la Raza in Oakland. If you or someone you know needs some free legal help, we've got their link up at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hena Baba. Now it's time for an audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious.
Hey, you want to take a flyer?
Makes you so sick at heart.
We're showing a demonstration of what it's like to go through an Israeli checkpoint.
Today, reporter Lizak Shalit takes us to a popular gathering spot on a historic campus.
Well, I'm part of a group called Fossil Free Cal. We're trying to get the UC Regents to divest from fossil fuels.
We're here every day from 1 to 3.
We're here because we're promoting an event. It's called Nusantara. It's an Indonesian cultural event.
We're on the campaign team for Annie Tran, and she's running for Senate, and it's for ASUC, which is Associated Students of the University of California.
In the fuzzy, fuzzy golden bear, go Bears!
This is the heartbeat of the Berkeley campus.
This is Sproul Plaza, and that description comes from Nadesan Permal, who came to the University of California as a freshman in the 1960s and never left. We're standing in front of Sather Gate at the north end of the plaza, listening to a student choir and photobombing a father's picture of his son in cap and gown under the arch.
Where this gentleman is standing just behind him, if we could go back to 1968, I would be standing there selling daffodils.
Since then, Permal has spent 49 uninterrupted years on campus, getting a doctorate, teaching in the poli-sci department, working as an administrator, and serving as president of the Cal Alumni Association. What he most values about this plaza is how it invites students to engage with each other and the world.
During the semester, this plaza during the noon hour is lined with tables in which students try to lure students to join student groups, present political information, a whole variety of different activities.
But it wasn't always this way. We walked to the opposite end of Sproul, where the plaza intersects with Berkeley's Telegraph Avenue.
This border that you see right here as we come to the sidewalk that belongs to both the university and the city used to be the line of demarcation. Political candidates had to stand on this side on a box or a platform and address students who were on the other side because no political speech was allowed on the campus.
But that all changed in 1964. A former student got arrested for distributing flyers on the campus side. The rallies that followed brought thousands of students into the plaza and launched Berkeley's fabled free speech movement.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop.
That's the voice of student leader Mario Savio. Within months of this speech, university officials were forced to relax the campus ban on political activity. This ushered in an era of anti-Vietnam War protests, mostly peaceful, but not always. In 1969, then-Governor Ronald Reagan ordered the National Guard to spray demonstrators here. It was the first documented use of tear gas by the U.S. military against its own citizens. Since then, every generation of Cal students has taken the issues of the day to Sproul.
Single file line! Straighten up that line, have IDs out!
Back at Sather Gate, Students for Justice in Palestine are using the arch leading to the plaza for some political theater.
For those who weren't here earlier, we're showing a demonstration of what it's like to go through an Israeli checkpoint, one much like those that dot the West Bank. We're going to show you what it's like.
Single file line! Have your ID out!
Single file, single file.
Stop! Stop!
Demonstrators from Tikva, a student Zionist group, are holding a counter-demonstration with tarps stained by mock blood. Here's Tikva president Michaela Fried.
For a while, they were telling us that we weren't allowed to be here and that we didn't have the right to free assembly and to demonstrate and to speak from our perspective. And it's kind of funny how the tables turn that way.
An uptick in anti-Semitic incidents on campus have tested tolerance for political expression here. Last March, the UC Regents responded with a statement of principles against intolerance that defends free speech while condemning derogatory speech.
Savio gave his famous speech on those steps. This is a symbol of that.
Fried is pointing to the steps in front of Sproul Hall. At the bottom is a granite disc set flush into the pavement. In the center is a 6-inch hole that marks an invisible column of air.
It says, "This soil and the airspace extending above it shall not be a part of any nation and shall not be subject to any entity's jurisdiction."
That column of air is meant to question the very existence of borders and celebrate the idea of unrestricted space. The plaza as a public space was foremost in the mind of architect Vernon DeMars when it was built in 1961.
His concept was to design two plazas, piazzas, that would be reminiscent of the Piazza San Marco in Venice, which would capture that huge public space. And after all, we have our own version of the Campanile on the campus.
Unlike the Venice version, the Berkeley Campanile houses a 61-bell carillon that chimes out the hour. The original design was quite grandiose, with flagpoles topped by busts of campus personalities and a glockenspiel.
It would have had, on the hour, a door that opened up, and out would have come a golden bear chasing a Stanford Indian with an axe.
That would never pass muster today. But a life-sized golden bear on a giant pillar does stand guard over Zellerbach Hall. It gives the place a rather fantastical air.
Berkeley is thriving. It's alive. It's raucous. I always compare it to that scene in The Wizard of Oz when Dorothy steps out of the black and white and opens the door to the color of Oz.
That's Sproul Plaza, where there's always something vibrant going on. In Berkeley, I'm Lizak Shalit for Cross Currents.
Thanks, Lizak. You can find more Audiograph segments that feature sounds from around the Bay Area at kalw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to the Cross Currents newsletter. Do it. And tune in Monday at 5. A candidate for San Francisco District Attorney is making juvenile justice reform the focus of his campaign.
The real crisis we have these days is not one of juvenile crime. It's the mental health crisis on our streets. I see the mental health crisis every single day. I've walked past 2 dead bodies in the last 6 months in broad daylight.
Meet Leif Dauch Monday at 5 on Cross Currents. Now let's listen to some local music. This is the Oakland Civic Orchestra. They're performing a free concert at the Lake Merritt United Methodist Church this Sunday. Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Julia Linus Goodman, Kristen McCandless, True Gwynn, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Victor Tense. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.